this episode is Jessie Lorich. She is the outdoor writer for the Everett Herald. We talk about her many trips in the Tetons, the Enchantments, some of the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Wonderland Trail. We also talk about a lot of her cool articles. Listen up, and don't forget to leave me some comments in the show notes. I need to know how this thing's going out there. This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos. Never held your hand.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album, Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. They're from Cedral Woolley. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I put this podcast together to inspire you to get out on the trail. Are you putting in 2-mile hikes, 5-mile hikes? You sitting on the couch? Have you even gone on a backpacking trip yet? I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. All right, next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
I'm Jessie Lorich, and I live in Everett, Washington.
Cool. Well, I came in contact with you a couple years ago, hiking, working on the trail, actually. And I found out that you worked for the Everett Herald. What do you do there?
I am the features editor, but for which is a job I'm pretty new in. But for many years now, I've done outdoors writing for them. And for about, I don't know, maybe 5 years, I've edited their outdoors page, which is one of the most exciting and most fun parts of my job.
Wow. Yeah, I bet. Well, how many people are on that staff? How many people write in that department?
So the Everett Herald is, I want to say we probably have, if you want to talk about the entire Herald, we probably have about 40-ish employees working in as news staff of some sort. But the features department is really small. It's me and 2 reporters and about 10 freelancers, some who write more than others.
Wow, and how many of those typically go towards the outdoors then?
So for outdoors, I'm the primary writer. I usually write about 3 of the features. So we have 4 sections a month, usually, each Sunday. I usually write 3 of those feature stories, and then various freelancers will fill in that 4th one, or sometimes I grab something off of The Wire or something from another newspaper in the area.
Well, I've read quite a bit of your articles. What are some of your articles that you like to say, I wrote that?
Let's see. You know, I wrote a story a while back about personal locator beacons, like DeLorme and Spots and the various different types of beacons where you can, you know, if you break a leg in the middle of nowhere, you can press a button and initiate a rescue. I really liked writing that story. I think the options of beacons are kind of confusing. And that story had I was able to do a very compelling story of that, of a woman who was hiking the PCT. She'd been section hiking for probably a couple decades. Very, very experienced hiker, in decent shape, you know, no problems beforehand. And then I believe she was near Kennedy Creek.
Oh, I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, right. So she was near Kennedy Creek, you know, middle of nowhere. No easy way out from there. And she just randomly passed out. And she thought, you know, people pass out. But then she kept passing out. And so she and her hiking companion thought about it for a while, ended up spending the night, and then in the morning pressing the button. And it turned out that she was indeed pretty seriously ill, and it took the doctors a while to figure out what was going on with her. But I mean, that saved her from a pretty bad situation, being able to hit a button and be airlifted out of there.
Oh, man. Yeah, I remember watching that airlift video. Now, when you guys post articles like that on your website, are you able to connect to those videos and such?
I did, yeah. That airlift video is quite amazing. The Snohomish County Helicopter Rescue Team, I think, those people are incredible. Like, they're so well-trained, and the vast majority of them are volunteers, you know. It's pretty amazing what they can do. And so whenever possible, I do try to share those videos. And I definitely put that video on that story online.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Well, I'll put some links to some of your articles on the show notes here too.
Another story I wrote that I really had a ton of fun writing is about people who do turns all year, which is people that try and get out and get go skiing every month all year round. And I wrote about it in the summer. Last summer, when it was a horrible year for skiers, but I really enjoyed writing that story. The people that do that, they're so enthusiastic and they have so much fun. I interviewed Christina, who is a woman that works at the Mountaineers, and she always skis in a tutu. And I loved the sense of like adventure and fun that those skiers really have.
In July and August, did you remember where they were skiing?
You know, she ended up going down to Oregon and skiing down there, I believe. I can't remember off it. I think she went down, what's the ski area down there? Doesn't Hood have a ski area that runs all year? I personally am not much of a skier. I like cross-country skiing, but I don't do much downhill. But as part of the reason I liked writing this story is like they made me want to become that sort of skier.
Man, I remember reading that one also. That was a really compelling story.
It was really fun to write. The skiers are so psyched about what they're doing, and they work hard for their hobby.
I'm sure. So those are your top two?
I've written many stories, but those are the two that come to mind right now that I really, really enjoyed writing.
I think that's really cool because I know that you've written a lot of your own personal journeys, and to take other people's journeys as your favorite, so that's pretty special.
I do, you know, when I write my stories about things that I've done, I love writing those stories, and I think they're super fun, but it's harder for some people. It's easier to tell someone else's story. For me, it's easier to tell my story. So I think I'm more proud of the stories I've done about other people and able to convey what's going on well and with their passions. But some of the stories I've written about hiking with my daughter, I'm also, those do have a certain spot in my heart. I wrote about taking my daughter hiking once after she had informed me that she hated hiking. I think she was 4, and I was a bit traumatized by that statement because I love hiking. So I told her we were going on a picnic, which worked great. I said, when we get to the end, we'll have cake. And I packed chocolate cake. I let her choose the lunch. I packed chocolate cake and candy canes and something else like Skittles, you know, something else horrible. And that was her lunch. And she hiked 4 miles with only one or two complaints. Worked great.
Wow. So are you still bringing that kind of lunch on the hikes then?
I do. I always bring something like that's just complete sugar for her to eat. She's 5 now. She's real slender. She's got a crazy fast metabolism. And so you can just feed her pure sugar on a hike and she'll just run through it.
Oh, man.
I do bring more substantial things also.
The incentives, though, help out.
Yes, they do. Yes, indeed. Her favorite is Skittles are probably her favorite.
Nice. That's good. Yeah, you got to keep them happy. That's for sure.
Yes, indeed. hiking with a kid is, it's fun, but it's a challenge.
So you write for the Herald. Do you read anything from like the Seattle papers or anything?
I do. I love reading all the other outdoors coverage from around our region. The Seattle Times does some great stuff. They do some really, nice travel pieces that I really enjoy. There's a reporter who writes for the Salem newspaper, and he's amazing. He's always written a lot of great stories. He does stuff similar to what I do, so I enjoy reading his stuff a lot. What else? The Tacoma Tribune does a great job with outdoor stories. A few years ago, they did this giant package on hiking the Wonderland Trail, and it was just amazing. It was so well put together. I loved that. It had a great web presence. I don't know if they've preserved that web presence for posterity, but at the time it had a great web presence, and it was just a really good, it had everything you needed to know about hiking the Wonderland Trail.
That sounds really good.
I really do enjoy reading other newspaper stuff and seeing what they're doing. Occasionally I read something and I think, I wish I would have thought of that first.
Yeah.
There was a story in the Seattle Times by a freelancer, and basically she paired hikes with breweries. I thought it was brilliant. And the headline was, let me see if I can remember it exactly. I believe it was, "Take a hike, have a beer, life's perfect, here's where." And I thought that the reporters don't write the headlines, the copy editors do, but I thought that was just the most perfect headline ever. And I was, you know, I often read things like that and was like, oh, I wish I would have done that first.
Yeah, that headline would have made me read it for sure.
Right? It was a brilliant headline.
That's great. I wonder if it's the same person that's blogging now down in that area. I can't think of the name. I just caught on to a blog down there. Beer at the Bottom.
No, it is. It is not. It was not that person, I believe.
Yeah, that's like a male female team. So I thought, yeah, maybe. But
I remember her name is Christy Karras. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's K-A-R-R-A-S. She's a freelance writer in this area, and I know I've read other stuff by her, but that hiking and beer one is the one that really stuck with me because it was a very clever idea.
Oh, that's great. That sounds really good. And so when you read these articles that are from kind of out of your little area of Everett, kind of Snohomish County area, does that kind of make you wish that, you know, do you feel like you're kind of tied down to your area, or do you kind of, would you be feel comfortable writing a story about the Wonderland Trail, say, for instance?
I try to focus as much as possible on Snohomish County because the Herald is very, we're really strongly centered on Snohomish County, but we definitely have some leeway to do more stuff. About 8 years ago, I hiked the Wonderland Trail, about 60 miles of it, and I wrote about that. And then the next year, my husband and I went back and hiked the 30 miles of the trail we'd missed and the 30 miles of the Northern Loop, and I wrote about that again. So I definitely get a chance to write about stuff out of our county from time to time. I try not to do it too often because I mean, the great thing about the Herald is we're really local, and there's tons of stuff to do in Snohomish County. And so as much as I can, I focus either on the county or things that are really nearby. Like, oh, you know, not too long ago, I did a story about hikes along 90. You know, and that's not in Snohomish County, but it's something you can easily do, you know, in a day from Snohomish County.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I've also noticed too, in reading some of your articles, that you like to kind of try to find a tie back to the county somehow too, right?
Whenever possible. Yeah, I really do try to do that. Which is something we do kind of throughout our paper, you know, like we'll write a story, that maybe has a national tie-in, but there's something local going on to it with it, or there's a local person who is involved. We're proud of being very strongly Snohomish County. And so that's one of the things that I try to do, and we all try to do.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. So who or what got you into hiking?
I don't even remember when I started hiking. My parents were hikers and backpackers. So, you know, I've been hiking as long as I can remember. I didn't do a ton of backpacking with my parents, but we did a few trips.
Where'd you grow up at?
I grew up in, I was actually born in Everett, but my parents moved with me to Boise when I was about 3. And I was in Boise until I was 20. So I spent most of my life in Boise and did a ton of camping, ton of hiking, mountain biking, cross-country skiing. Idaho's great for that stuff. There's just amazing outdoor places out there. So I don't remember when I started hiking, because I always did. Like, I got into it for myself really seriously after I graduated from college. My husband and I decided we wanted to do the Wonderland Trail. So we started off, our first backpack trip was actually up into the Enchantments. It was a really high snow year, so we didn't make it all the way up. We made it as far as Lake Vivian. But that was plenty of challenge for our first backpacking trip. Our packs were way too heavy, and I had an external frame old pack. That pack was promptly replaced. Yeah, I think that pack made it on two trips, and then I was like, yeah, you're done. ever since then, I've been very active with hiking and backpacking whenever I can do it.
Yeah, that's great. Sounds like you've got some really good trips down. I read your article this last summer that you and your husband hiked a portion of the PCT too, right?
Yeah, my husband and I hiked from Stevens Pass north up to the Suwato River Trail. I think that's about, oh man, I'd have to go look at my notes. I think it's roughly 85 miles. It was a great trip. It's gorgeous back there. Sections of that trail are really remote. And we're not super fast backpackers. So that for us, that was like an 8-day, no, it was a 9-day trip. So that was a lot of food to carry, a lot of food. But other than that, it was a fabulous trip. It was really gorgeous, with the exception of one horribly rainy short section of, let's see, how long was the horribly rainy? It was horribly rainy for like a day and a half. The rest of the time we had decent weather. It's really gorgeous back there, very remote. Didn't see many people.
You were able to go right by the area where the lady was choppered out too, huh?
We did. Yeah, we went right through there. I definitely thought about that while I was going through.
I'm sure.
I carry a DeLorme partially for that reason, from having done that story.
Yeah, that's I hiked a portion of that this last summer as well. And man, I tell you, that area between White Pass up out the North Fork Sauk and the Suwato is just so remote, like you said.
If you're going to do that section, I think the shortest way you could possibly do it is about, 40 miles? I mean, if you came in the North Fork Sauk and went out the Suwato, I'd have to look at a map to be certain on that mileage.
I think it was more like 50, but yeah.
That could be true.
There's no other
option. It's a long haul, no matter how you do it.
But yeah, I've done that section, the other section too that you went through. That's just some beautiful area.
It really was. I'm trying to think if I had a favorite in that section. I don't know. I really liked being able to watch Glacier Peak for so long. To be able to just kind of wrap around Glacier Peak was really cool.
That is neat.
Yeah. And to get to see all sides of it.
Yeah, it's a pretty special mountain. Was the trail pretty busy?
The trail was decently busy until we got to, kind of White Pass area. From that point on, we'd see 3, maybe 4 people a day, and that was it. One day we only saw 2 people. That was the day that it poured. Oh, it rained so much. At the top of Fire Creek Pass, Fire Creek Pass is allegedly beautiful. Have you seen it in the sun?
No, when I went through there, it was just complete fog.
I still have not actually talked to anyone in person. I don't know anyone who's seen it in the sun. I don't know if bad luck, whatever. Allegedly, it's beautiful in the sun, but the day we were there, it was raining sideways and we were sopping wet. And the place we had planned to camp was way, way too exposed for that sort of weather. And we ended up camping further down below tree line, so we weren't quite so exposed.
Oh, so did you guys make it all the way down to past Micah Lake then?
We did. We went down past Micah Lake. We ended up making, the only time I've actually done this, we ended up making kind of a makeshift campsite. We walked way off trail, set up a tent, got in the tent, no hot dinner that night, no stove. It was just, we were so wet. It was just pouring.
Yeah, there's nothing down there. There's all brush and trees.
Yep, yep. We did our very, very best to do a leave no trace campsite. Once we left there, I don't think you could tell that we were there, but it was not an ideal campsite. It wasn't very flat, wasn't very smooth.
Yeah, well, plus all the hiking in through there. I mean, all the down trees, there's even a portion on that little section heading down that was like closed. The switchback was closed there, I believe.
Yes, indeed. That where the trail was just gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. That section, because the Seattle had been washed out for so long, and that was the main access for trail work in that area, there's a big section there that still has a lot of down trees and really needs some trail work. It's still, it's still totally hikeable. It's just a little bit more work. When we were hiking down that section, we were hiking down into the Seattle River Valley, and we're hiking down, it's like over tree, under tree, around tree, over tree, under tree. Where'd the trail go? Oh, there it is, over tree, under tree. And we're doing that. I think my husband likes to count things. So he was counting trees, and I think he stopped somewhere around 50. He got bored, and we kept going. And then we hit the first cut, hit a freshly cut log. It's like, this was cut this season. And it was we were so thrilled to see that. Because from then on, the trail was clear. And, the North Blades 350 and Backcountry Horsemen had been up there working on that little section of the PCT, and they'd done an amazing job.
Yeah, the episode probably is going to be right before yours was Don Sanderson, and he was on that crew. He talked a lot about that. So that's that same area.
Yeah, they did an amazing job on that section. And I mean, there's lots more work to do, but it's going to take years to clear up that backlog, I'm sure.
Yeah. They could have a couple more trips up there and still not get it.
Yeah.
So between all these overnight hikes we're talking about, what was your favorite out of all of those then?
I always have a hard time saying what my favorite hike is, because often it's whatever I've done most recently. So I will say that, I really do, though, think that that section of the PCT from Stevens to Seattle is the favorite long hike I've ever done. I also did the Teton Crest Trail with my husband a couple summers back.
Oh, yeah.
That was also incredible. Not local, but wow, it's beautiful up there.
Yeah, for sure. I actually remember seeing, did you write an article on that one, too?
I did, yeah. Yeah,
I remember reading that.
That was, it's the Tetons are incredible, and you go up all these, go over, depending upon how fast you're hiking it, usually about one big pass a day, and you're really high and the passes are, 10,000 feet or in that vicinity. And then you drop down into all these valleys, and each valley has a different feel. So it's not really that long of a trail. I think it's, 40-ish miles. But by the time you've hiked it, you feel like you've gone farther.
Wow. Just because all the different areas you feel like you covered.
Yeah, yeah. And it's challenging because, you know, some of the, I think the highest pass is 10,400, and living at sea level, basically, that feels really high to us.
Yeah.
So if you don't give yourself a few days in somewhere, you know, in that vicinity for us to adapt, it's, the elevation definitely gets you.
That's cool. So what about, we talked a lot about overnights, and what about day hikes? What are your favorite day hikes in the area?
Let's see. I really love Goat Lake out on the mountain loop. I don't know what it is about that trail, but I think I've hiked it 4 times, which, you know, I try not to rehike things very often because there's so many hikes here. But yeah, I really love that hike. Maybe it's because you can go up one way and down another.
Make a little loop, yeah.
Yeah, you can make, it's not, you know, not a complete loop, but you can make a little loop type on that trail.
Nice. So do you find yourself up the Mountain Loop Highway quite a bit then?
I do. I think the Mountain Loop is probably my favorite hiking area. For one, it's super close. Doesn't take me long to get there. There's just so many options out there, and it's, you know, it's just gorgeous. There are amazing trails out there.
You ever find yourself stopping in at the Green Gables?
I do. Yeah. I stopped in there. A month or two ago, took my daughter out to go sledding and we stopped in there.
Oh, cool.
I love that little place. I'm glad they're there.
Yeah. I'm trying to get Edith on the podcast. So hopefully she's got some time to come on.
That would be great. She knows everything about that area.
Yeah. So what about Idaho? Do you have a favorite hike over there?
Oh, man. You know, I haven't really done much hiking in Idaho since I left. So nothing springs to mind immediately. I do have some favorite areas. I really like a lot of the stuff up around Idaho City, which is, I don't know. I'm kind of an hour north-ish of Boise. I really like McCall. McCall, Idaho is gorgeous. Really, McCall's great year-round. In the summer, there's hiking and mountain biking, and in the winter, there's skiing and snowshoeing. It's very popular, but the entire area around Sun Valley it's popular for a reason. Sun Valley is really gorgeous. I feel like hot springs. There are a lot of hot springs in Idaho. Yeah, that might be the biggest thing I miss about Idaho is all their hot springs.
Yeah, I think somebody was trying to make a trail that covered as many hot springs as possible, like a long trail, and Idaho was a hot spot for that. Pardon the pun.
Yes, that's a brilliant idea. I would hike that trail.
Yeah, little R&R.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great.
Well, do you have a scariest moment on the trail?
Oh, let's see. I don't have any moments of, say, sheer terror on the trail. I will say that going up and down Asgard Pass, a friend and I and my husband all hiked up there. We stayed down at the lake and then hiked up Asgard Pass and up and down in a day.
That's to get into the enchantments, sir.
Right, exactly, to climb up into the enchantments. We couldn't get a permit to stay in the upper core, so but we did get one down low. So we stayed down low, hiked up, hiked down. You know, hiking that up and down, I was never particularly scared, but on the way down, boy, I was exhausted. Going up and down that pass in one day is a challenge.
Was it worth it?
Oh, it was worth it, definitely. Oh, you know what? I did think of a scary moment, actually.
Yeah.
Something just came to me. So we were hiking up Asgard Pass, you know, super steep, real loose rocks, tons of rock. My husband is walking in front of me, and he's walking along, and he's, you know, there's lots of crumbly rock. He steps on a rock, you know, roughly the size of a basketball, maybe a little bigger, and it comes loose. And it goes tumbling down the hill. And there's basically no one else on the entire mountain except for directly below us. So he immediately yells to them. They look up, they see the rock coming, and it's going, you know, straight for them. And so the two of them split apart, and the rock is bouncing, and it's going to, like, the way it's going, it's going to bounce directly between them. It's going to be fine. And then the rock hits another rock and splits. And it's like that, it was like that video game, Asteroids. One half of the rock went to one hiker, and one half of the rock went to the other hiker.
Almost perfectly.
Like he was aiming for them. And one of the hikers just kind of, he was able to step out of the way. You know, they were paying attention. It didn't hit him. But the other hiker, like, it basically came right for his chest, and he basically kind of grabbed it in this move that looked like he was playing rugby or something. Like he was going to tackle the stone, and he kind of like threw it out of the way. It was, both of them were fine. You know, we checked and made sure everything was fine. The guy who actually kind of tackled the stone had like a few small scrapes on his arms, but nothing major. But it could have been much worse.
Yeah, that is a very scary moment.
So yeah, that was definitely a moment of sheer terror on the trail.
Wow. Yeah, I've always been scared of that, but never had any experiences one way or the other with that. So that, I can only imagine what you guys were feeling.
We were able to chat with those hikers later, and they were doing a through hike in a day. And at the time, we were still pretty new to backpacking and hiking. And I just remember being so impressed.
Like, yeah,
that's a grueling day. And, you know, they stopped and chat with us. And then later we saw them up at the top, and they were jumping into a mostly frozen lake. Yeah, they told us that, you know, it was refreshing. Their legs were tired. It helped.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. I'm sure they were sweating a lot, and just get all that off your face. And that's good. Well, what about a funny story on the trail? Anything, all your years of hiking?
Let's see. So when we were hiking in the Tetons, one night we were camped, and it was a really quiet night. No wind, just real quiet. And I woke up, and I heard this, like, gnawing sound, like, nah, 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 nah. What's that? I kind of shook the tent. I figured, you know, maybe there's something, you know, there's some animal out there eating, whatever. Shook the tent a little bit, noise stopped, went back to sleep. Wake up again, hear the sound, nah, 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 nah. And I think, oh, wait, my hiking boots are outside my tent.
Oh, no.
I hope they're not chewing on my hiking boots. So grab my boots, which had the socks in them, and the socks are gone. So I pull the boots inside, find my socks, and they're all, like, wet. Like, something's been slobbering on them. So pull the boots inside, pull the socks inside, get my husband's boots inside and his socks inside. Go back to sleep. Wake up. And so this time I, like, really slowly open the tent, and I turn on the flashlight, and it's a porcupine. And it's chewing on our sticks. Like, my husband and I hike with these, like, you know, they're just sticks. They're like wooden hiking sticks. We had them for years. We picked them up on our very first backpacking trip. And we always hike with them.
Yeah.
And we always just, when we camp, we always just throw them outside our tent. Well, they were covered in sweat, and the porcupine obviously thought they tasted delicious. So now our sticks have these great porcupine teeth marks on them. And the next morning when it was light, I pulled out my, you know, I got my socks out to look at them, and they had dried. They weren't slobbery anymore, but there were little wood shavings all over them. Like, the porcupine had left his wood shavings on my socks.
Oh, that is weird. Man,
it's a little weird.
Living in Washington, you never really expect something like that.
No. And, you know, I shined the light on the porcupine, and it just looked at me like, what? Like, what am I going to do? It's just a porcupine.
Well, I'd be kind of scared of a porcupine. I mean,
it knew that it had nothing to fear from me. It was not at all concerned. It, like, really slowly kind of waddled off, looking kind of resentful. Not that a porcupine has facial expressions, but
I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did. Oh man.
I do have one more funny story that came to mind.
Oh yeah.
We were hiking the PCT, my husband and I, Jerry, from Stevens Pass up to Seattle, and he had really bad luck with this huge, like, he just got an awful blister on one of his heels. It was gross. And so, you know, we did what we could to treat it, but it, you know, some blister pads and blister band-aids and whatever. And it was just a giant blister. And so one day he's like, I can't remember, second or third day into the trails, blister is bugging him. And so he takes off his boot and he ties it to his pack and he puts his flip flop on and he hikes in one boot and one flip flop. And I was telling him, this is a terrible idea. What are you thinking? This is a terrible, terrible idea. And it actually worked. Like, I think he did that for like a day and a half. Blister healed enough that he was able to.
That's crazy. He was able to
finish the trip.
How many people did you pass?
Oh, many. It was because it was still early in the trail, so we passed quite a few people. And some of them commented. Some of them just kind of stared at him like, what is with the guy with the one flip-flop?
Sometimes it's better not to ask.
Great thing about Jerry, he's not self-conscious. Like, you know, he made a joke about it. He kept joking that his trail name was going to be Flip-Flop or Lefty or, you know, something to that effect.
Oh, man. Yeah, and, you know, it is kind of funny about people being self-conscious because, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere. So being self-conscious should be the last thing on your mind.
It really should. Yeah. And, you know, it's one of Jerry's best personality traits is he's not easily embarrassed, basically.
Your backpack then on all these overnight hikes you like to go in? What do you guys carry for a tent?
We have an REI, just a standard REI two-person tent. That's what I use if I hike with my husband. And then if we hike with my daughter, we have a three-person tent. If I go by myself, I have a one-person tent that I actually bought this winter and I haven't tried it yet.
Nice.
I'm pretty excited to give it a try. I don't actually remember the brand of it. I love good gear, but I'm not really a gear junkie. I'm not obsessive about it. But we do, I mean, we kind of have a gear for whatever we're going to be doing.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of fun though to dive into it because some people carry, you know, just tarp shelters or hammocks or, you know, there's a lot of different options. So you guys are definitely tent people. You have a 1, 2, and 3-person tent.
we are definitely tent people. My husband really likes to be, he definitely doesn't want bugs. He reacts terribly to mosquito bites. So no tarps for him, nothing like that. I actually don't react particularly terribly to mosquito bites and they don't tend to bug me. For some reason they don't like me. So I wouldn't mind as much having an open shelter, but you know, the tents nowadays, they're getting lighter all the time.
Yeah.
And so, well, the tent that I have, our two-person tent, is the one we've used the most. Now it's probably 8 years old. And, you know, once my daughter gets a little older and she's either able to stay with someone more for us to go do longer hikes or she wants to come with us, we might buy a new tent. But just because the technology is adapting so fast and they're getting so much lighter so quickly.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. It makes a big difference.
I can never justify getting new gear because my wife always says, well, if you just lost the 10 pounds and you know, maybe you'd, you know, that's where I'm at.
Yeah. And you know, it's February and I'm starting to like, I feel you, because this February is like, you know, never really in my best hiking shape in February. Still feel like I'm trying to recover from the holidays.
Well, it's time to get out.
Yep. Oh, I went on a hike yesterday with one of my friends up to Oyster Dome, which I'd strangely never been to, even though I went to college at Western. And it was fabulous. We'd planned to go about 6.5 miles and ended up going more like 8.5 because we took a loop. And it felt great to be out. It felt really good.
It's a good hike. Well, and I heard recently, or like within the last couple of years, they added some switchbacks at the top. It used to be like a straight up section for like a good quarter mile or maybe eighth of a mile. And I heard that section's still there, but there's also some newer switchbacks to take up.
There was a trail crew from WTA working on that trail, and they were doing it. That trail's beautiful. It's amazing. There was a big crew. There were probably 20 people up there working on it.
Oh, the day
you
went?
And you can tell they've been working. Yeah, the day I went. So we stopped to chat with them a little bit and said, you know, we love you guys. You're incredible. But really, that trail's beautiful. And you can see some sections where they've rerouted it, where it was, you know, it looked like it went through a kind of a mucky, muddy area. And some sections where you can tell, like, it was, the trail was getting real, like turning into a gully. And they've rerouted it, and the reroutes are beautiful, and they've done a good job hiding the old trail. So it's like, I did a couple spots. I was able to spot the old trail, but they've really hidden the access to it. So I think that those old trail areas are going to recover really nicely.
Oh, that's good. Well, and I'm sure you probably read the news that might get logged.
Yes, I did indeed see that. And I don't know where that stands. I believe that there was a public comment period that just ended. Is that right?
I don't know the most recent stuff. I remember I saw the article by Craig Romano, and that's kind of all I know about it. So
I'm actually going to write about that trail. So on my list of things to do is to find out what the status of that is.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be a great article to read.
It was, you know, it's a beautiful spot.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool too for the trail crew, because I mean, that is a trail you can work on almost all year. There's hardly ever snow or anything.
Yeah, for sure. No, and I'm not joking. That trail is gorgeous. They're doing a really nice job. We were very impressed.
You're trying to tell me I need to go up there.
Yes, you should go up there. You know, if I did it the way I did it, I parked at Chuckanut and hiked up, you know, just hike up straight to Oyster Dome from there and then back down. That's like 6.5 miles. But you can also park at Samish Overlook, and that's the place where a lot of hang gliders launch from. And so there's a beautiful view right at that parking lot, and then it's a shorter hike up to Oyster Dome. So if, like, if you've only got, like, you know, you don't have a lot of time, that would be a great option too.
Well, I'm not looking for the slacker route.
No. Well, you know, I don't know what the difference in gain would be, but it's true that the hardest part of the trail is like from Chuckanut. Like, it starts at Chuckanut and it's unrelenting for the first, I don't know, mile and a half.
Yeah, there's a lot of switchbacks in there. So we talked about your tent. What about your sleeping bag and your pad? What do you sleep on?
I've got just a standard down mummy bag. My husband and I have mummy bags that they match together, so they zip together, which I love, because then you don't have the restrictive feel of a mummy bag. Like, you have the option to pull the hood over your head and be warm, but it doesn't feel as constraining. And then it also, like, those bags stay really warm. They're nice. And then we both have pretty decadent pads with, you know, they're air inflated and they also have some insulation. My husband's a big guy. He's 6'4". And so he has an extra wide, extra long pad, and it takes up a good portion of our tent.
and he packs it in your backpack.
Oh no, man. He carries it. He's like, I bet that thing could weigh 15 pounds and he'd still carry it. He loves that pad so much.
Oh, cool. Well, if, you get the information on it, we can post it in the show notes.
You know, I love gear, but I'm not like, I'm not a big gear geek, so I never remember the names of anything.
Yeah, that's cool. But, you know, things like that where you get bigger hikers or taller hikers, whatever, you know, people want to know that kind of stuff, so that helps out.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'll look it up and I'll let you know.
Yeah, so what about your day packs? Do you guys carry anything cool up on day packs, or are you pretty standard with your...
Let's see. So what do I carry in my day pack? I always carry the 10 essentials. I took the Mountaineer Scrambling Course in Everett a few years back, and I was pretty good about carrying everything before that, but now I'm really good. Like, I always have shelter. I always have, like, I just have like a, I have a small little ditty bag that has lighter fuel starter, and I just put it in my back pack every time. But, other than that, I don't care anything specific except for food. I like to get up to the top, sit down and stay for a while. So we always bring, something good to eat, tuna and tortillas with pesto or cheese or crackers.
Candy canes
for my daughter. Yeah. Usually, you know, have you seen those little soft wine bladders that you can pour wine into?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we usually have a glass of wine at the top, depending upon the situation. If we're just hiking, yes. If I'm scrambling, no.
Right. Not over Asgard.
No, that would not. Wine and Asgard would not go well together. But, you know, if we're doing a day hike, yeah, I want a glass of wine at the top. It's great.
That's cool, yeah. I kind of skipped over your backpacking. What kind of stove do you guys have? Not brand, but style. Because I know you don't remember your brands.
This one I actually do remember. It's our stove is an MSR, and it's you know, one of the white gas stoves.
Yeah.
I'm not super sold on that stove. My husband loves it. I think it's annoying to light. So for Christmas this year, one of my friends gave me one of the little, you know, just one of the little tiny canister stoves. It just screws right on top of propane, a small propane canister. I think the thing, I don't know what it weighs, you know, it can't be more than a few ounces. It's pretty, you know, maybe 6 ounces. It's tiny. And I think that's probably what we're going to carry from now on. And, you know, when he and I go backpacking together, if he still wants to carry the white gas stove, you know, fine, whatever. It's easier when you're splitting the weight between two people.
That's true.
But when I go, I've got some trips planned on my own, and I'll certainly bring the little propane stove. Just a lot easier, a lot smaller, light easier to light. Not as fussy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you know, those the other kind, the white gas, I can understand why he likes that. I mean, it's and it also, they've been around for so long too, so the other styles are kind of new.
Yeah. And you know, those white gas stoves, they are pretty reliable. I mean, we've had that thing for, I think we've had it for at least 8 years, and we've replaced a couple like O-rings on it, and that's it. That, you know, we've had to replace, like, you know, a few small parts, nothing, you know, clean it, nothing major, but, you know, for what we paid for it, like, that thing's definitely paid for itself.
Nice. All right, what about your clothing? What, do you guys have certain styles that you like, or?
This year I started hiking in a skirt.
Oh, yeah.
And it's best thing ever. It's lightweight, it's versatile, it's cool, you know, as long as you're not going to be doing like horrible scrambling, it's fine. And even if you are like climbing over trees, I didn't have any problem with it. I love hiking in that skirt. I usually bring, I think my favorite piece of gear is one of the smart wool shirts that I have. That's half synthetic, half wool. And that's not the exact percentages, but you know, it's a blend of their smart wool and a technical material. And it's very soft, very warm, but not too warm. It dries faster than wool. It's just, it's really kind of the perfect hiking shirt.
That sounds cool. Yeah, I can imagine that they do that for the comfort.
Yeah, it's a great shirt. I love that shirt.
Nice. What about your guys' rain gear you used at Fire Creek Pass?
Oh man, that time we actually had both raincoats and ponchos, and we were still pretty wet. The ponchos were more to keep our backpack dry. We don't have pack covers. And the ponchos, you know, they did a great job of keeping our packs dry, but they blow around a bit. So we have the rain gear or the rain coats underneath them. I never wear rain pants. I've never really found it was worthwhile. Because once you get into camp, you take off your wet pants and put on whatever your sleeping layer is, and they dry overnight.
I agree. Yeah. The funniest thing is everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to get this rain gear and that rain gear, and I'm going to be the driest person on the trail. But reality is, there's you know, certain days, there's just no hiding.
Some days, it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to be sopping wet.
Yeah. And how about you guys' feet? Were they pretty wet, too?
Oh, man. They were so wet. So wet.
Well, that was the rain that we ran into was right in that same section, and all that brush, because like we talked about, there hasn't been any trail crews up there, so the brush was, even when it wasn't raining, it was just as wet as ever, because it was all just sitting right on the leaves of all the little plants.
Oh, the lupin, normally I love lupin, but I hated it on that trip, because it's like the lupin it's designed to deliver water right into your boots, just like the way those leaves hold water, it just pours right into your boots. Yeah, we were really wet.
It was bad. It's funny that we're in that same boat. Not a boat, but
yeah, nice. In that same section of trail, it's not hiked a lot, and it's overgrown with lupin. It's beautiful, but oh man, we were so wet.
Yep. Well, what about, are you afraid of anything in the woods?
Logically, no. but, you know, I think maybe like everyone else at 2 a.m., I wake up going, that was a bear. I'm sure that was a bear. It was definitely a bear. It has never once been a bear. Never once been a bear. But there's nothing that I'm, you know, I think I'm cautious. I have a DeLorme, especially, which I bring pretty much all the time when I hike, especially if I'm going alone. And I try to not make stupid decisions. But there's nothing in the backcountry that really particularly scares me.
Yeah, I think I really overcame my kind of what, like you're saying, the fears that aren't, you know, realistic, but, you know, the fears of the bears and stuff was this last, it was 2 years ago, hiking from Chinook Pass to Snoqualmie Pass. And I stayed at the meadows there. And now, of course, now I'm the one that can't think of the name of it. But anyway, there's a cabin there. And I stayed outside the cabin because I didn't want the mice. And I heard animals all, you know, just all night. And mm-hmm. Even bears coughing. The elk were literally almost trampling my tent over. And I mean, I think I had every single animal, including humans, all around me. And, you know, I was out by myself. So, yeah, it really kills the fear once you kind of experience it all.
I think I lost a large portion of what backpacking fear I had when I took a solo trip this summer. It was the first solo overnight trip I've ever took. And I went 2 nights up the Seattle River, up to Seattle Pass, over to Miner's Ridge, and back down. And that was a gorgeous loop. And the second day on the trail, I didn't see a single person until I came into camp at Image Lake. And that was, it was gorgeous. It was actually rained most of the day, but it was gorgeous up there. It was amazing.
Image Lake is so amazing.
It was incredible. It never did. It didn't clear out for me while I was up there, but it didn't actually matter. Like, it was so incredible.
Yeah, just the terrain that's right around the lake there is just beautiful.
Yeah, really gorgeous spot.
Well, episode 2, Hadley Can Hike. He brings up that section, I don't know, probably 5 times in the episode. It's pretty funny.
I can't blame him. It's a gorgeous section. I would definitely, you know, there's not a lot of backpacks that I'm like, you know, like I said, I don't like to hike trails multiple times generally, because there's like, there's so much to do, but that's one that is definitely worth doing again.
Yeah. And it's more accessible than Fire Creek Pass, but you definitely, it would be good to get up there and see what you missed as far as like Glacier Peak, the actual image of the Image Lake, you know?
Yeah. I did get up to the, I walked up to the lookout at the lookout, the people that were staffing it for the summer were there, and I chatted with them a little bit, and I got little, you know, Glacier Peak, it peeked its head out just a tiny little bit. Just enough to kind of tease me and make me want to go back.
Exactly. Yeah. When we were coming out of our hike, when we were leaving out of Suyatl, we ran into a couple of gals that were coming down from Image Lake, and I think they'd stayed one night, maybe 2 nights up there. They were hiking in their camp shoes because they had so many blisters.
Oh,
I don't know if they just weren't prepared or whatever. But so what about Leave No Trace?
I try to follow Leave No Trace as much as humanly possible. Like, I'm sure there's always more that we could learn about it. But I think it's really, if we're going to be out there and backpacking in these beautiful wild areas, I think it's our responsibility to be really careful of how we take care of them. You know, I want my daughter to be able to go out there and enjoy those places. And, you know, if you're, you know, camping somewhere inappropriate, for example, like it only takes one or two people camping in one spot before it starts to look like a spot. And then suddenly there's this de facto spot. Which is why when we camped in the middle of nowhere or in that horrible campsite that one day, we were careful to be way off the trail, to be somewhere not obvious, to put out, you know, put the brush back when we were done. So I try to be as careful as I can when I'm out to leave no trace.
Yeah, that's cool. I think some people take it to certain levels and some people keep it on a, you know, more level plane. I don't know. It's kind of hard. I'm using the wrong terminology, but some people can get very into it.
Yeah. And some people are really skilled at it. And like people that want to do like cross country backpacking, you know, and they don't want to go follow a trail or scramble, whatever, you know, those people are skilled at finding a campsite that's not set and staying there and not leaving a trace. I think I would need more training or more practice to feel comfortable doing that. But I admire people that are out doing that sort of exploring, because that does sound pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, what are your future hiking goals?
Let's see. So
not to ruin any future articles or anything that you might be writing.
No, I don't think you can really spoil something like that. It's not like a movie ending. Let's see, this summer, my plan is to hike as much of the PCT in Washington as I possibly can. I haven't figured out exactly where I'm going to go yet. The logistics are challenging, you know, with a 5-year-old and a husband and, you know, family and job considerations. But that's my big goal for the year, is to knock off as much of the PCT as I possibly can.
Nice. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I'm doing a section up above Highway 20 this year.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, I hope so.
My husband and I were talking about doing Highway 20 south.
To Suyatl?
Maybe down to Stehekin.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
We haven't sat down and looked closely at maps yet, but that was one of the areas that we had talked about doing. And I would really like to do that.
Yeah, from what I understand, at least on paper, it looks fairly easy. It's mostly downhill. I think not downhill like crazy, but you know, it loses elevation.
Yeah, the overall difference. I haven't looked at the elevation profile for that section yet, but I think that would be a fun section to try. And you know, I'd love to go north from 20, like you said. I bet the scenery is just amazing up there.
I'll have to send you my dates.
Yeah, let me know what you're doing. It's, yeah. it's there's so much great hiking to do around here. But so my focus this summer is going to be the PCT.
Nice. So you go into a lot of backcountry areas, but does, when you're backpacking and stuff, does the fire make a perfect camp, or do you care less about fire?
When I'm backpacking, I don't care about a fire. If I'm car camping, I definitely want a fire.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
Yeah. For if you're car camping, you gotta have the fire, gotta have s'mores or something similar. In the backcountry, I want my tent and I want to go to sleep.
Exactly. That's funny. I'm the same way. I don't even want the dinner. I just want to go to sleep. Do you guys have a dog?
We do not have a dog. We had a dog in the past, and we took him hiking, but he never backpacked with us. Mostly because we backpacked in a lot of areas that don't allow dogs.
Right.
Rainier, Enchantments.
Cool. You go on a lot of day hikes, you go on stuff, you see a lot of dogs out there?
I do see a lot of dogs out there. I personally love dogs. I always get along well with dogs. I get frustrated by people who leave their dogs off leash. Mostly just because a couple of my hiking companions are nervous around dogs. And it seems unfair to, if you have a dog that's jumpy, especially, you need to have it on a leash. But I definitely don't mind seeing the dogs on trail. I especially, you know, it's people that have really well-behaved dogs. I'm always impressed with them.
Me too. Well, one of the things, in episode 3, I interviewed, Karen, and she runs with the Hike It Baby group. And, she talked a lot about the same kind of thing. Like, you know, kids and dogs, sometimes they don't mix because a lot of dogs are big and jumpy and kids are kind of almost already afraid of animals out there anyway. So you hear about bears and wolves and stuff. And then all of a sudden this dog comes trampling down and not on a leash. And that's kind of, and that makes sense.
Yeah. It's a little alarming when, you know, the dog, even if it's just a super friendly dog, if it's too friendly, it's going to bowl your kid over on accident. But like people that have their dogs either on leash or dogs that are just well enough trained that they'll stay close. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's some really well-behaved dogs out there for sure. So I met you on a trail crew party. Have you done much of that, or is it just kind of hit and miss for you with the family?
I have not done much trail crew work, which I'm horribly embarrassed by. I should have done, given how much I've used the trails, I should have done a lot more. I'm hoping to do some with the WTA this spring. I was actually planning to do a lot in the fall and then got tendonitis and had my arm in a splint for about a month, which I don't recommend, by the way. Not better than a cast, but still not fun. I am now thankfully out of that splint and the tendonitis is chilled out a bit. So I'm hoping to do some trail work with the WTA.
Nice.
It's only fair given how much I go out hiking.
Yeah, there's a lot of work this year too with all the storms and.
There is going to be a lot of work this year. Yeah, there were some gnarly storms this year, so I'm sure there's a lot of trees down across trails.
Oh yeah, I've already seen some out there myself. So what about photography? Do you carry a big camera or do you use your phone? How do you do that?
If I'm going to be writing a story, I carry my big camera. It's not a super, it's a nice camera, but it's not super fancy, reasonably lightweight. I also carry my phone. But if I'm not writing about a story, or if I'm not writing a story, I don't bring a fancy camera. I just bring my phone.
You don't want the people at the paper to make fun of you for using your phone.
Oh, I definitely get teased for using my phone. Recently we have a new, he's not new anymore, but we have a photographer who's into hiking. Kevin is one of our photographers and, he has shot a lot of hikes for me, which is great because I can go out and I can do what I can do, which is hike and write about it, and I don't have to pretend that I'm actually any good at photography, because I'm just, I want to be, but I'm just really, it's not one of the things that I've ever mastered.
Yeah, I remember when we were out together, you had somebody show up with that did some photography, so that was cool.
Yes, and that was great, because I very much know that I am not a photographer. When I shoot, I just take a million photos and kind of hope for the best.
Cool. Do you have any place to that people can go to look for you?
Yeah, I'm on our website, which is heraldnet.com, and I'm almost always right on heraldnet.com/explore northwest.
Okay, and then they'll just look for the Jesse Lorch.
Yep. Yeah, most of the stuff on Explore Northwest is me. Occasionally I post other people's stuff there, but not very often. Most of the stuff that's there is me. But, you know, you can also go to our website and click on the outdoor section to see what else we're doing.
Cool. It's the time of the podcast that we ask our guests some questions. They don't know these questions. They've never heard them before. So let's see what they have to answer. But first, let's talk about Cascade Hiker hats and bumper stickers. Go to CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Check out the hats and bumper stickers. Support the podcast. You can also donate. There's a donate button on each of our show notes. Go there, find pictures of our guests. Now enjoy the rest of the show. What piece of gear do you carry that you consider not replaceable? Or maybe people think you're weird for carrying it.
Oh, my hiking stick. This wooden hiking stick that's
chewed up.
chewed up by a porcupine, yeah.
That's a good story, though, too.
It is. That wooden hiking stick is probably going to get passed along to my daughter this season, because last year I stepped on it during the PCT hike, and I broke off just enough to make it a little too short.
Wow.
So I guess that maybe I won't be carrying that this summer. It's also possible I can't bring myself to give it up and I'll still be carrying it.
You know, gives you an opportunity to be looking, keeping your eyes open for the next best thing.
That's true. And, you know, the next best stick might come along. Or maybe I'll join the modern age and get trekking bowls. Or maybe not.
So you kind of already covered this one. Do you ever take alcohol or marijuana out on the trail?
We take wine. Occasionally we'll take, like if we're doing a long hike, like we might pack a flask with whiskey.
Yeah.
But beyond that, nothing really exciting. We didn't on our PCT trip this year or last year, we would normally pack alcohol, but you know, it's such a long trip and we're carrying so much weight. We're like, nah, you know, we're not going to pack, you know, we didn't bring even like a small flask. And then one day we're hiking and there was this group of two guys, and we had kind of been leapfrogging on the trail. And they had run out of water in a pretty dry area. And we had way more water than we needed, actually. So we gave them water and they gave us one of those little, like those little airplane sized whiskey things.
Wow.
And it was great. So we had like our one little airplane size whiskey thing, which we shared that night and greatly enjoyed. And yeah, that was fun.
That's awesome. I'm sure that the guy was regretting it later on.
I don't know. They were pretty grateful because they wanted to camp before the next water source. And so what we gave them was enough to kind of get them there. And then it turned out that they actually found, we saw them again later on the trail. They found a water source. I can't remember where, but they ended up finding a small water source that did what they needed it to.
Nice. So do you filter all your water on the trail?
Like 95% of the time we filter our water.
What style of filter do you have?
We have one of the little UV pens.
Oh yeah.
Nice. I like those. I am thinking of maybe going to one of the small filters where you use a squeeze bag, or something, you know, or one of the inline filters. Cause the technology on those the design on those is just so amazing.
And the weight
those and no batteries.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big deal. Yeah. I carry a Sawyer, Sawyer Mini.
I've been looking at those. Those are, they're just really clever. And this might be the year that I finally make the change to that.
Cool. Well, you know, there's a couple of those backpacking items like the Sawyer, and you've seen these, heavy stoves that you can like charge your phones on and whatnot. I don't know if you've seen those before, but
I have seen those. Those are pretty cool. Yeah.
A couple of those type of items, even though the stove might be too heavy for most people to carry, I believe I was reading an article somewhere that they were kind of more designed for third world countries, and it's kind of something that the backpacking community can kind of pick up on too. So it's kind of a neat thing.
That is really cool, because you know those filters to, you know, you or me, those are a luxury. Like backpacking is awesome, but we don't have to go backpacking. But if you were in a third world country and you don't have a clean water source, having something like that is, you know, important. I think it's great that they've been adapted for backpackers as well, but their original use is really cool.
That is cool. It sounds like a good article.
That would be a good article. Oh man, coming up with article ideas is one of the best parts of my job. You know, like 75% of the ideas I come up with never actually come to fruition because there's only so much time. But
yeah, just ask my wife. What, you're going to do a podcast?
Right. There's so many ideas and so little time. But I do like, even if I don't get to write all those story ideas, I do like coming up with them.
Cool. Well, do you carry bear spray or a firearm ever?
I do not. I never carry a firearm. Bear spray depends upon where I am. If I'm like, when we went to the Tetons, obviously bear spray, and never saw a bear anywhere to be even the slightest alarming. On a long backpack trip, I will usually carry bear spray. I don't on all my day hikes, you know, depending upon where I'm going.
Nice. Do you keep it on a clip or do you keep it packed?
Depends upon where I am. Like in the Tetons, we kept it on a clip. When we hiked the Wonderland, we kept it on a clip. We actually saw quite a few bears, including one pretty close, but we never needed to use it. Like they didn't want anything to do with us. They just wanted to use the trail because it was the easiest spot from point A to point B. Just the same reason we were using it.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So you mentioned trekking poles. That was one of my questions.
This might be the summer. Yeah. Especially if I'm going to do a lot on the PCT. If I want to, you know, try and make some long mile days, I think the trekking poles might be useful. Might be the time to finally make the switch to those.
Is your sticks, how do you feel they are in lightness? Are they heavy? Because some sticks can be pretty dried out and light, and some of them.
You know, I think they're probably comparable. You know, they're probably a little heavier than a trekking poles, but not a ton. And we just carry, we both just carry one. So overall, the weight is light. But, you know, I haven't actually retried trekking poles for a while. So I bet they've gotten, just like everything else in the backpacking world, bet they've gotten a lot lighter.
Yeah. And have you ever seen the ones that are just one, like a staff? I think they make those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But why would you do that if you already have a stick, right?
True. The wonderful stick. I think this is probably going to be the year that I'll finally give trekking poles a go.
Okay, cool. What type of socks and footwear do you use?
I've always used, on my backpacks, I've used like standard hiking boots, and I usually wear smart wool socks. But I think I'm going to go to a lighter weight shoe this year. I think I'm going to find some sort of trail runner. Because really, you know, my boots are supposed to be waterproof. But, you know, in rain, like we get around here and with the brush, no matter what, your feet are going to get wet. And the waterproof boots, they just don't dry out.
That's true.
Even in a few days without rain, like they were still kind of still a little wet. And my feet kind of paid for that. So I think this year I'm going to try. I've been looking at a few different trail runners. think I'm going to give those a try and see how they work for me.
Nice. Well, don't throw your boots away because you need those for the WTA.
Oh, no. Those boots are definitely not going anywhere. And if I'm going to do any scrambling or anything, I'll definitely want the boots. The boots I have are wonderful. They have amazing soles. They have those lovely grippy soles, and they've got super nice support. They're good for scrambling or, you know, really rough trails.
Well, make sure you get the right soles then on your, if you get some trail runners, because I've heard people say that, like, well, I just don't like these trail runners because they're not grippy like my boots. And it's like, well, yeah, you didn't get a brand that's got grippy soles. So
yeah, these are, the trail runners are going to be something I really research quite a bit. Heather Anderson, the woman who set the AT record last year, I know that she hiked in the, I believe they're called the Lone Peak Ultras. And those sounded really appealing to me because they have a wide toe base and they're supposed to have a pretty great sole, pretty good traction.
Well, she would know.
She would know. Yes.
Anish.
Yes. She's amazing.
Yeah. Local.
Indeed. Yeah. She lives in Edmonds. Actually, one of the stories I have written about her, I got to interview her last year. Interviewing her was lovely, but I was kind of absurdly nervous. It's kind of hard to interview one of your heroes. I've always, you know, I've really admired her. I love her writing. I love what she's done. I think she's just super great. And so interviewing her was a little nerve-wracking.
Well, not to mention, like, if she's a hero of yours, she's also known nationally. So, I mean, that's a big deal, too.
Yeah, she is. She's very, you know, she's well-known, and she's, you know, she's very hero-worthy. I'm not coming up with great words to explain why I think she's so amazing, but, you know, I've always really admired her.
Well, we'll have to read the article to figure it out.
Yes, it's on the Herald's website.
So do you have any hiking books that you refer to people, or what is your favorite hiking book? And this could be, you know, we all have trail guides. If you have a special author that you like in the trail guide section, that's fine too. But what about like the nonfiction or the, you know, something that inspires you to go outside?
I really love, for hiking guidebooks, the book called The Wonders of the Wonderland Trail. It's probably a little, I don't know if it's been updated. It's probably a little out of date now. But it's a trail guide written by someone who clearly loved the Wonderland Trail. Tammy Azars has a book on the Wonderland Trail. It's also really nice. But it's the one that was, the Wonders of the Wonderland Trail was kind of like this mile by mile thing, which doesn't hold up well because the trail changes every year, but it just, I did love the level of detail she put into writing that book.
I like the title too.
Yes. You know, it's a great title and it had a beautiful cover photo. I love all of Craig Romano's hiking books. If you've ever heard Craig Romano speak, he's got this huge, big, enthusiastic personality. It really comes through in all of his hiking books. I love reading his hiking books.
Hopefully he's coming on the podcast. I've contacted him. He's interested. So.
Oh, great. You should, that'll be wonderful. He's fabulous. And then I really enjoy Tammy Azar's books. She's pretty great. Let's see, as far as more like less away from like the trail guides, I really liked the book, I Promise Not to Suffer. It's a book about, it came out after Wild, but it's kind of has a similar story of Wild, of this woman hiking the PCT. In this case, she was hiking it with her husband. But at the same time, her mother's kind of coming to the end of her life. And I found that book really enjoyable.
That sounds good. Yeah, I read Marmot's, gosh, what was the Marmot book? The PCT book. That's one of my favorite PCT books as far as like hiking the trail. Edited. The book is Dances with Marmots.
Everybody likes John Muir, but you know, John Muir, he is really a lot of fun to read.
Yeah, he's talking about inspiration.
Oh, yeah. He also wrote, I think it was my first summer in the Sierras. I'm not 100% certain on that, but I believe it was in that where he wrote this story about basically climbing to the top of Yosemite Falls and kind of like looking down as it plummeted into the valley. Like he wanted the view the water had as it leapt over the top.
Wow.
So he got right out to the very edge of the falls and looked down, and then, you know, precarious position, but he's John Muir. He made it work. And then he went back to his camp that night and had nightmares all night about falling.
Wow.
Because, you know, he made it through that event. And then like overnight, his brain was like, can't process, can't process, can't process. I just loved that story.
That is cool. I should read more of his stuff. I think I've only read one of his books.
Yeah, he's great.
If you could choose one person to hike with, whether they're around with us anymore or not, who would it be and why?
Oh, John Muir, for previous stated reasons.
You want to be on top of that waterfall?
Yeah, man, I don't know, maybe. I think I would probably have nightmares about falling all night too, but it'd probably be worth it. Or Rachel Carson. I admire her greatly and her writings. Who wouldn't want to go hiking with John Muir?
All right, last question. Do you listen to any hiking podcasts?
I am not currently listening to hiking podcasts because I'm on an audiobook kick. I have listened to hiking podcasts. I liked Ratatouille's PCT podcast that he's done. But at the moment, I'm mostly listening to audiobooks.
Oh, that's cool. Did you see that he's getting back on the trail this year?
I did see that. I'm excited for that. That's great.
That's cool. I reached out to him. He wants to be on the podcast too. So hopefully I'll connect with him also.
Good. I will look forward to hearing that. That's awesome.
Well, cool. Hey, thanks for being on the Cascade Hiker podcast.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Don't forget to subscribe in iTunes. Also, leave me a review over there. That really helps me out. This person gave me 5 stars. L.A. Tara. She says, I am so motivated to go hiking now. Great interview. I learned some really good tips. Thanks. And thank you, L.A. Tara. If you leave a review, I'll read yours on the air too. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show. Go on back to CascadeHikerPodcast.com and, leave me a comment. Tell me what you thought. That's how I know everything's going good, or maybe some things are going bad. But maybe you have some ideas there. And if you have some more questions for any of our guests, leave a comment under their episode, and maybe we can get them back on and answer some quick questions there. You can send me an email if you don't want to leave a comment. It's ibighiker@gmail, ibighiker@gmail. Give my Facebook page a like, North Cascade Hiker. Follow me on Twitter, @N_CascadeCapitalHiking. That's @N_CascadeHiking. I try to give you guys multiple ways to get a hold of me. Give me some comments on the show and maybe some ideas for some guests. Thanks again for listening to the show. Here's a little bit more of that Whiskey Fever track, Tall Grass.
See her laying down in the tall grass, playing mandolin in a white dress. So come running when I hear that song. It could never be wrong. It could never be wrong. Where you wanna run, baby, I'll run too. I would leave this world for a beautiful girl if I could just find